ballgame. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me.
Welcome to our podcast about life and legends in Marion, Kentucky. Today, our guests will be a few sports legends who truly helped change the landscape of athletics in Crittenden County during their era. Last week, I caught up with them at the Crittenden County Historical Museum as they were donating some memorabilia for display there at the museum. But first, we want to call attention to today's podcast partner, which is Gary Kruse Hauling of Marion. Gary Kruse and his team of professional drivers and haulers are the only place to turn for local hauls. Whether you need aggregate for a commercial job, rock on your driveway, sand for a child's sandbox, or dirt for any variety of reasons, it's Gary Kruse Hauling where you should turn. Just give them a call today, 270-836-8936. Again, that's 836-8936, and of course, 270 area code. Now, let's get right to the podcast, which was recorded in the fascinating museum on East Bevel Street. We're at the Crittenden County Historical Museum in Marion, Kentucky, and today we have some guests who are making contributions to the Historical Society and the museum. Gordon Guest, former president of the Marion Bobcats, started the semi-pro and collegiate baseball league here in Marion. We'll talk a little bit about that. We also have the Easley brothers here today, Willard and Harry. And Willard was on the 1942 football team that was inducted into the Hall of Fame a couple of years ago. We're going to talk a little old football, leather helmet style football, and talk about a little bit about baseball. And there are a few other people in the room. Bernice Maroney, who's the curator, is here. And some of Willard's, Harry's daughters here. And then a reporter from the Crittenden Press, Blake Sandlin. And first of all, let's talk about the 1942 football team. Willard, tell us what's some of your memories. That was back in the day when leather helmets were about all you had. Pretty rough game back then, wasn't it?
Yeah, they geared us all with those helmets, and I wasn't trained to block with my head, but I did, and I bursted the stitches out of my helmet, two of them, and the coach finally got it mended up. But understand later, a few years later, they began to make the solid helmets. But I enjoyed football. I played the first game I ever seen. And we had a boy on the team, the winning team. It was his only year he ever played football, Guthrie Croft. And he made the first team he played in. And we all was united. We didn't. Every one of us loved one another. We didn't have any arguments, and everyone did his assignment.
What were those football helmets? Were they actually leather or?
Leather. Yeah, three ply.
Three ply. So it had some cushion and give to it.
Just it had a band in it, uh-huh. A little band, but not much inside of it. But
and you did not have mouthpieces like they have today, or chin guards, or shin guards.
They put a nose guard on me after I got my nose broke, but I had them to take it off because it almost broke my neck to get a hold of it and tackle me with it.
Yeah.
So I had it took off.
Yeah. Do you see many similarities in the game as it is played today as it was then?
A lot. Back then, Coach Woodall, he had taught two undefeated teams in Oklahoma. He came back here, and we was without a coach. Mr. Hall was trying to coach us, and they asked Mr. Woodall if he had coached us, and he said yes. But he told me himself, he said, he analyzed the boys, and they were mostly country boys, and they hadn't had a lot of football experience, and they were the type of boys that walk behind the plow. And then he said that he figured that we'd use a ground plays, try to stay away from passes. We did that a lot, and we managed to move the ball just about every time we got a hold of it. Mm-hmm. But we used main strength mainly. Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a whole lot of passing team, not like it is now where there's 30, 40 passes a game.
Nothing like.
You know, a team that was considered a passing team maybe throw, what, 4 or 5 a game.
Yeah.
But now, you had told me back a couple of years ago, we were talking about this, that there was a particular play that you all ran, and you was the blocker.
Yeah.
Explain that. What was it called? What was the play?
Number 6.
That was your number? When you got in the huddle, you know, there was not a long series like they have now a lot of times, 42-yard.
It was either right or left.
Right or left.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, right or left.
Right or left.
That's all of us to it.
So how many plays did you have?
About 15. Yeah.
So this was play number 6, and you go right or left. Now, what? Explain the play. Line that up for me.
We would, in offense, I was a wing back, and I played in the number 6 hole. William Glenn McConnell was my blocking partner. That's when we'd run open field around the end or something, I'd carry interference, and Connor would run with his hand on my hip. Until we got to his interference, when they tried to get to Connor, I'd block him. I could feel him shove away from me, and he'd wing a swing around the end. Mm-hmm. And that's where we made most of our plays, most of our yardage.
So this was a wide play. It was not something between the tackles. It was around the end. So he could get on your outside hip or inside hip? Probably
right,
outside.
Outside hip. More right hip. Yeah. I could feel him every time he shoved away from me.
Yeah.
I'd feel him, he'd shove himself away, and he was good skirting around the end.
So you would take the end or the linebacker, first guy,
never came.
First guy inside was yours.
I blocked 2 or 3. I got a prize for open field block. I blocked 2 guys the same block.
Mm-hmm.
I just stretched out my body, and I never did get off my feet.
Yeah.
But I started to say the coaches, they bring their plays from college, and the boys here are not fast enough, they're not active enough, they haven't had enough skill about them mm-hmm. to pick out enough to perform those plays, is my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that we've had an awful good opportunity to be undefeated before now, mm-hmm. since then.
And your brother Harry. Now, Harry, you didn't play on this particular team that went into the Hall of Fame, but you were on the team, 48-49? Pretty good football team, too, wasn't it?
Yes, there was 13 of us playing in case one got hurt. We only had 2 substitutes. And we played Paducah. And down at Paducah, and they had 89 boys warming up.
89.
Taking half of the field for them to warm up, and we was down about the 10-yard line warming up. But Ron Johnson ran 89 yards that year for a touchdown. And I asked him, I said, after the game, I said, Ron, what were you thinking about? He said, I looked up and I said, Lord, you pick them up and I'll set them down.
Of course, we just lost Ron Johnson a couple of weeks ago, passed away. He was, I think, living in Florida recently.
Yeah, there's a story behind Ron. He was too old to play the last year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he and the coach both knew about it. None of the rest of us did. But
so we're past the statute of limitations on that, I assume. All we understand.
I think 19 was the cutoff.
Yeah, right.
But I think he played uneligible for that year.
Yeah.
We had a good year.
Now, that team that only had 13 players on it, we were talking earlier about how the opposing teams knew you had 13 players, and they knew, you know, if we knock 3 of these guys out, send them to the hospital, we win by forfeit. So you guys had to be tough.
Well, sort of. Butter Tier, I think he's passed on now. But he was playing and was practicing, and he was one of the substitutes. And in practice, I broke his nose, and we was playing, I think, over in Webster County. Mm-hmm. And Butter had, he couldn't play any on that team, on that game. He said, "Well, easily, you put me on the sideline and put somebody else over here with you." And I put out seven boys during that game on the sideline.
Yeah.
That was, well, I guess I tackled pretty hard. And then some of them I regretted the way that I did hit them, because I know it injured them probably for life. One was stretched out and hit him in the back. And I thought about that a lot.
And did you go on and play some football in college?
Well, we played, Bud Foster and I was elected to play on the East and West Kentucky All-Star football game team. And that was in the first one that was organized. Now they call it something else. Mm-hmm. But we were picked along with some other boys from different schools around over in Western Kentucky. And we practiced for a week, and then we played on a Saturday night. And back then you didn't have any protection as far as your face or thighs or... Mm-hmm. And we was pretty well beat up by the time we had the game. And old Frank Rochelle, he was with us. And he said, long after the lights went out on Friday night, he said, "I'll tell you what let's do. Let's slip upstairs where the East team are and beat the hell out of them. Throw blankets over and beat the hell out of them." And somebody raised up over another bunk and said, "Well, hell, are you pregnant?" But he wasn't going. So we had a good thing.
Yeah.
We got a scholarship from the University of Kentucky. And I don't know whether Bud ever got one or not. I never did ask him.
Uh-huh.
But didn't John Fox play then?
Who?
John Fox.
No, they played after that.
Didn't they? I know he went to Eastern. I mean... University of Kentucky.
We also have Gordon Guess, who, like I said earlier, started the Marion Bobcat team, started out a semi-pro team, and that evolved into a collegiate summer league program, which is now still viable, very viable, the Ohio Valley Collegiate Summer League, and teams in Paducah and Henderson, Madisonville, a lot of teams still around, but this is where it all started. Gordon breathed new life into what many, many years ago was the old Twin States League. This is somewhat an evolution of that, and it was defunct for many years. But Gordon, you started this in the Marion Bobcats in 2008 and created the Ohio Valley League, you and some others. And then we just kind of ran out of steam here, and the interest waned a little bit. I'll let you speak to that. But the team went out of business after the 2013 season. But it was a great run, wasn't it?
Good run. Good run. 6 years of it.
Yeah.
And we made money.
But it wasn't a money-making venture,
though. Not supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah,
we're thrilled to death just to break even.
Yeah, just an opportunity to have these guys and play the ball field. Which, by the way, the ball field is named after Gordon. He put a lot of time and financial resources into the ballpark, as did others. But great baseball facility here, Gordon B. Guess Field at Marion Crittenden County Park. And you know, I don't know if I've told you this, but. You know, well, when you created the Bobcats, you moved the fences back.
Yes.
And made them longer because these bigger guys were going to play there, college-age kids and semi-pro players. And so it made it more difficult for the local kids, the high school players, to hit home runs. And do you know, we had not had a home run hit out of that park by a Crittenden County kid for the last 5 years until two nights ago, and Braxton Winders, who just left the eighth grade, knocked one out. It was pretty amazing to see. He's quite a man to hit one out of there. Take some hope. Tell us a little bit about the Bobcats. What was the idea? Why do that?
Randy Morgan, who owned the Kitty League name, mm-hmm. Was up here one day when we were working at the ballpark. And he
Which was the old Kentucky, Illinois, Tennessee.
Minor league K-I-T-T, and they called it the K-I-T-T-Y Kitty League. And he talked me into doing this. Said, oh, you can do it for $10,000. Right.
It was a little more than $10,000.
Really, that was a pretty reasonable price, but at that time. And I said, okay, so I got some fellas and got together, and we sold some advertising, and the advertising we sold on the fence, put a big 8x12 banner on the fence, and that was at $100 a year. We sold 60 of them, so you know the math. Mm-hmm. And then we had the players pay a fee to us to come in here and play every year. So there's another $500 per player. You get about 30 ball players, that adds up as well. And the concessions don't really amount that much, and ticket sales don't amount that much either. We are limited to $5 a head. We got a stadium seats out there, which seats about, I think it's 250 people, and we didn't fill it up many times. But that made the dollars work. We had a local fellow here who's now since gone who gave us two vans for our transportation, because we have to travel all these ball places and towns around here like Madisonville and Owensboro to play ball. So we had our transportation virtually paid for, just gas only. Mm-hmm. And but what really, the way we started out doing it was trying to talk people, families, to housing one or two ball players per season. That's 2 months of ball players in your house, and that's it. And that worked all right for 6 years, and after that, the market died. Just not big enough a community to
support,
keep those people around. But I understand now that they're having the same problem in Hopkinsville. Mm-hmm. They're having the same problem in Owensboro. Mm-hmm. And they're big towns. But it's still a tough game.
It's a hard sell sometimes to bring someone you don't know into your home for
And most of the guys that we had that turned out to be good kids.
Yeah, you make relationships. And I think, you know, that's something that we have found since then is a lot of relationships were made between the community and those guys that played here. And even today, there are four in professional baseball right now, Travis Jankowski being the head of that, and he's in the major leagues with the San Diego Padres, but have three more guys who are on professional contracts in the minor leagues. And so, you know, I think a lot of the people who knew them certainly are trying to maintain those ties even more so now, because it's nice to be able to hang your hat on the fact that, hey, I had a big league baseball player who stayed in my home, and Travis Jankowski, the Padre, when he was here, stayed with the Padre. He was stayed with the pastor of the United Methodist Church, Wayne Garvey. So kind of an interesting coincidence there. But it was just a great time in our history to have this collegiate baseball league. And summer collegiate baseball, maybe a lot of people listening wouldn't know what that is. But the college seasons are generally, they start in February and end in May. Well, those boys have a lot more time in the summer. They need to be playing baseball and getting better, especially those in the younger, you know, freshman and sophomore age group in the collegiate players. So their coaches look for places they can go play.
That was the easy part.
Finding recruiting. Players. Yeah, because everybody wants to play.
We got ball players from as far away as on the East Coast to Maine and the West Coast to Oregon. They'd come in here, and if they knew we were here, they'd call us and line up some ball players. And Steve Fowler, who was our first manager here for 3 years, was wired pretty good with a lot of the coaches.
A lot of calls.
Yeah, and he'd get calls, and we'd get these guys in here to play, and everything worked pretty good.
A lot of guys who came from pretty big schools. I know the boy that just signed last week with the Yankees.
Yeah, Division I ball players all the way down to Division III.
Yeah.
And it didn't make a whole lot of difference when you stand up there to play. Mm-hmm.
Cody Brown played for Mississippi State, who just had a big run in the college playoffs and He played here in 2013, the last year that you had a team, and he just signed with the Yankees last week. So, yeah, big, a lot of fun.
But the main guy we had here we still talk about is Jankowski.
Yeah.
He was a kid from Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and he came in here. I remember picking him up at the airport in Nashville, and we stopped up there at some restaurant and had grits for breakfast. And that's the first time he'd ever heard of that. But we educated him pretty quick. When I got him up here and settled in with the preacher's house, he started playing, and he let us know the first game or two just how good he was. And our coach knew how to get it out of him, and he did. And he turned out, he made he hit better than anybody that ever played here in this old kiddie league. Mm-hmm. He hit .492, I believe it was. That's close to it, something like that. And he stole the base a day. Mm-hmm. And he wound up being a bonus draft choice, first round with a professional baseball. And he got $1 million bonus to sign. And not a bad day's work. He's there now.
Yeah. So you go from a bunch of country boys who all they knew were grits and eggs to recently this baseball team where the boy comes in here from out of state and had no idea what a grit was.
Of course, I'm on Facebook like everybody else is in the whole world. And there's no telling how many of those kids got my name from playing ball. And I get stuff all the time from at least 15 of them or 20 through this Facebook stuff. There's one kid named Rizzuto. Uh-huh. I think I get something every week for that kid. He lives in Baltimore. I'll never see him again, you know. Yeah.
But those ties
maintain connections, see?
Yeah, that's great. All right, well, if you want to see any of this memorabilia that has been donated to the Crittenden County Historical Museum by these gentlemen, stop by. The museum is open daily during the summer season and the fall. Come by, check out this and much more. They have tons of stuff to keep you occupied for probably 2 or 3 hours in here. And don't forget today's sponsor. When you need a local haul, call Gary Cruz Hauling in Marion, Kentucky.